Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Today on the telephone, we have Alan Ward. Alan is the owner-farmer of the St. Paul Mountain Vineyards down in Hendersonville, North Carolina. And recently, he had some really good luck with some wonderful wines that he submitted and won some gold medals at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival back this past fall. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Really appreciate all you do for the vinifer growers and the grape growers in western North Carolina.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. How about telling the folks who are listening in about history, about how you got started in wine making and grape growing, and how'd you get into the business?
Well, our family's been here for 9 generations. Actually, I went down to a North Carolina Wine Growers Association meeting, and a gentleman said that in North Carolina, we have to work on marketing. That in North Carolina, we make a $7 bottle of wine that we have to try and sell for $14 a bottle. And I'm fairly competitive. And up here in the mountains, it's a little bit different from the Piedmont. Up here, people don't realize the uniqueness of the mountains. So that kind of hit me a little wrong as a challenge. And I just thought, well, you know what we really need to do is focus on growing better fruit or the best quality fruit we can and finding help with the winemaking process. My original major was chemistry and biology, but from growing up in this area, we knew it was unique. And we know that we grow great apples here. Vinifera is somewhat similar. Grapes are somewhat similar. They like the cool evenings. They don't like the humidity quite as much. And we just thought this would be a good place to try and grow vinifera. We just knew that those cool evenings, the higher elevation, the lack of humidity was perfect. We had studied French vinifera, did a lot of work with Tony Wolf. We were lucky enough to have a gentleman that was former chairman of the horticulture department at Cornell University, Dr. Anderson, who you may know or you may have met.
Yep.
So we did a lot of homework, and initially we thought, well, you know, we'll grow grapes and we'll sell them to Biltmore. And we looked at that business model, and that's not a way to make money. That's a commodity, and when you're a commodity, you get commodity prices, and you're subject to a lot of other things. The agritourism idea really hit us pretty hard. When we got to visiting, we probably visited 60, 70 wineries. And the places that really caught our attention were the people that were unique. So we really enjoyed people. We enjoyed telling them about the region. And we got fired up about that, and we started seeing what we could plant. We were the first folks to plant French vinifera on a commercial basis here in Henderson County. When we decided to do that, we did a lot of research. Michael Jackson, a good friend of mine I went to high school with, is a West Point graduate, actually, and played sports with Mike. But Mike is a research person. So he did a lot of research on the rootstocks and the different varieties that he felt that would be possible to grow here. So we grow at 2,300 feet and at 3,000 feet elevation. We purchased another piece of property where we're growing at 3,500 feet elevation. We're actually working on an AVA. We've already applied for it. That's the Eastern Continental Divide. And we're very close to what's called the Thermal Belt. It's where the glacier took a hard left. And that's created Polk County at 1,000 feet elevation. We found some specific locations where frost had not really been a problem at the higher elevations with the apples, and we decided to go for it. First grapes that we planted were Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot, Malbec, Riesling, Gewürztraminer, and Grüner Veltliner, and of course Chardonnay. The hybrid that we grow here that we've won a gold medal from the state and done very well with is Pinot Blanc, which is a very, very good grape. When you get a little age on the vines, it really is as aromatic as a Riesling. So that's kind of giving you a drink of water from a fire hose of how we got started. It was really a challenge. It was put forth by a gentleman that didn't know he was challenging us, that we just wanted to grow the best possible fruit that we could and then find a partner to work with that was a winemaker. All of our winemakers have been West Coast, one gentleman from the Pennsylvania region that were winemakers and had been winemakers for at least, I think, the minimum experience our winemakers have had, or one of our winemakers have had, is probably about 15 years. Most of these guys came from UC Davis or Cal Polytech, worked at larger wineries and got a little bit burnt out with working for a big corporation and were able to practice their craft. So I'll kind of pause there and see if you have any questions yourself.
Well, it sounds like you've had a good history here of starting from scratch to put some nice grapevines in the mountains. We're always interested in talking to people who've had that experience because, as you said, it's unique here in the mountains, the way you have to do things. It's just different. And even in the case, what we're doing at our small vineyard here, working with these cold hardy Cotua muscadines, it's just different. Things that work down in the flat part of the state just don't work for squat up here. So I'm glad you've had a chance, in a sense, to develop through some of that. And certainly you appear to have a willingness to share that with other people and help some other people start with their vineyards. I'd like to go back and check on two things here. Since you've gone through this process of doing the research, putting the grapes in the ground, getting to the point where you're making wine and so forth, what would you say that you did right in that process?
What we felt we did right was not just listen to the same old, same old. We did a lot of research with Virginia Tech, Cornell, and we did a lot of the rootstock research. Rootstock can really make or break you if you've got wet soil, rocky soil, different types of soil, as well as the type of clone that you produce. A clone is a clone of French vinifer versus something that's not in the vinifer family. Of Riesling, some of the Riesling have tight clusters, which allows for more rot. So we did a lot of homework on what the individual clones were and how they were paired with the right rootstock. And we experimented on some things. We had no clue if we'd be 100% right, but we haven't had anything that would not grow. We've had a couple of small surprises. The Merlot has a little bit of an issue on these 0 days, and I think a lot of that has to do with the rootstock that we had. We don't irrigate here. We feel the irrigation, studied that quite a bit. We augered our holes out in the majority of the vineyard we planted. We augered about 3 feet deep and 3 feet wide, and would really prepare that soil. We had subsoil to where those roots would grow deep. My understanding is if you irrigate, what you do is you have a lot of water on the surface, and those roots, when it's a little bit dry, don't want to go down. They'll wait for that water, and they don't dig deep. And that's what you really need. Grapes like stress. You want small berries. You don't want big watery berries. So we've made our grapes pretty tough here. They don't, they have to fend for themselves, so to speak. Another thing we tried was the Geneva Double Curtain. The Geneva Double Curtain is a process that where it looks like a double wire, and where your vining wire, instead of being about 3 feet off the ground, is five and a half feet off the ground, and it spreads out. So instead of having one trunk coming off of a scion, we've got 3 to 4 trunks coming off, and what we do is we try and control the vigor in the mountains because we have great soils, as you know. You don't get anywhere unless you're willing to innovate and take a chance. Not being foolhardy, but not being afraid to do the homework and then taking a little bit of a risk. Farming is a risk one way or the other. Doing something that's unique, that not everybody else is doing, I mean, that's how you differentiate yourself.
Well, growing grapes is definitely agriculture, and it's hard work, and you better think carefully about what you're doing before you put the grapes in the ground and hope you made the right decisions as you went along with enough research to back it up.
And I know muscadines are up and coming. That's something we're going to have to look into because I think year before last, the muscadine wine was won the top award at the state fair.
Yeah, they have a lot of acreage here. Most people don't realize that of the just under 2,000 acres we have in North Carolina, something like 1,400 acres is under muscadine.
Now, I wouldn't doubt that at all. They've got Dufflin on the coast, which is I think that's the largest winery in the state that actually grows their fruit. I think you're right there. And so we're beginning to experiment with some things on that range. We've been looking at grapes and tasting wines that were made and really quite surprised.
Alan, I noticed in this past fall, you had won 3 gold medals, actually 2 double golds with your Vignier and your Laurel Hill made from Vito Blanc. You got a double gold, and one of your wines called Home Place, which is a blackberry wine, you won a gold. So how about talking to us a little bit about those specific wines and some of the fun things you did to get them to be gold medal winners?
Well, I'll tell you, the blackberry, a lot of people kind of turn their nose up at that when they hear it. They think of syrupy, sweet, fortified wine where someone's taking juice and put in. The blackberries are the only thing that we personally don't grow, but we have family members that grow those. Mike Pack has grown blackberries for us, and we use him as a main supplier. Went to high school with Mike, so we kind of consider him family. I'm sure being here nine generations, we're related some way. But what we do is we let those blackberries, they grow commercially, we let them hang on the vine, and they don't have to do a lot of the things. Like in our vineyard, we don't use pesticides. We use systemics. We use fungicides, but we don't use pesticides. We try and stay away from the systemics, and we tell them the same way because we're not growing for food quality. We use a lot of topicals and things that we're not saying that there's not issues with, but there are very few issues. They don't affect the fermentation for a systemic. It gets in the circulatory of the plant. But the blackberries, we try not to overprocess anything. We'll do some things, and again, I'm not a scientist, not a chemist. We'll do some things where we get beetles, the copper beetles. We don't really mess with them unless they get pretty infested, and a lot of times we'll use a Lapis spreader sticker, which is a component of a fungicide, which you put in with a fungicide to make the fungicide, like an antibiotic, stick to the plant. And it's like an emulsifier from dishwashing detergent. But what it does, most insects breathe through their abdomen, and you can actually kind of, suffocate. I know it doesn't sound good to suffocate the insects, but it's better than using pesticides. So I can remember as a kid, just common sense things, I'd have to say that, to where we don't overprocess. And Chuck, you may remember this, when we had corn in the garden, we would take an eyedropper and we would use mineral oil and we would put it in the silt to kill the worm. And all you were doing is really suffocating the worm. I mean, the mineral oil we used to take, as a laxative, not to be too gross there, but, you use mineral oil for a lot of things. But the emulsifier is similar to that. So we try and do things. We're working with a gentleman in Avery County, where we're working on clover to where we don't have to use herbicides. We don't like to have kill strips. Again, with that Geneva double curtain, if it's a wet, wet, rainy, or even if it's a very harsh, dry winter, summer, that naked kill strip there, the soil allows water either just to go down there or evaporate out. So we're trying to use some what we call common sense. We keep it clean around the vine.
We've been talking with Ellen Ward, owner and farmer down at St. Paul Mountain Vineyards in Hendersonville, North Carolina. So we're going to take a break at this point, folks, so hang on, we'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax. Wanda lives on Walnut Cove next to the steep cliffs overlooking the Norfolk and Southern Railroad Bridge across the French Rod River. There are so many walnut trees growing there, it's hard to walk around anywhere without stepping on old walnuts. Wanda noticed one day that when she picked up the freshly fallen green walnuts, that her hands turned a shiny brown color like she had a great suntan. That was when her slick idea came to her. Most of the farmers in Madison County have a farmer's tan. For you folks in the city, it means your arms and neck are tan from working all day in the sun while the rest of your body is as white as a sheet. Wanda makes her product by gathering up a bushel of green walnuts. She then dumps them into her old wringer washing machine on her front porch. The agitator makes the green walnut hulls release from the walnut. Then she runs the green hulls through her wringer and catches the wonderful juice in a gallon jug. She mixes the juice with some possum grease and puts it in a small salve tin, and voila! Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax. Liberally apply her wonderful wax to your untanned body and you will turn a marvelous dark tan that you can be proud of. No more farmer's tan. You will be the talk of the town with your wonderful tan when you march in one of our famous downtown Mad Marshal parades or go skinny dipping in the French Broad River. Another specialty product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Wanda Wilson's Wonderful Walnut Wax today at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now, back to our regular program.
Welcome back, folks. We've been talking with Alan Ward, the owner and farmer of St. Paul Mountain Vineyards down in Hendersonville, North Carolina. I had no idea, Alan, that you were working down there with what I call the non-traditional approach to growing grapes, because most of the other folks I've talked to just spray the crap out of their grapes, and it's just awful.
We don't have a spray schedule. We use a Venturi sprayer, and we use an electrostatic sprayer. And I can tell you that electrostatic sprayer is somewhat a Kenkelder. They don't make them anymore. They're from Holland, And we look at things where we can be practical. For one thing, we use about 40% less chemical with electrostatic sprayer because it's not floating around everywhere. It's like in a paint booth. You put a positive charge on that chemical as it comes out. It's got the, and let me tell you, I found out the hard way that these things really work. I was saying, you know, this electrostatic stuff, it must work off the PPR. It works off the ignition system of the tractor. I touched one of those plates at the back of the sprayer. My dad was an electrician as well as a farmer. I had never been shocked that bad in my life. I thought my heart was going to start. So I had to touch it again to get it going. The electrostatic works for us. We're very careful. When we spray, I usually would spray the fungicides either around dusk, and, you know, it's usually be night when the dew was settling, because we wouldn't have all that overspray. Or early in the morning, right before the sun comes up. Because when the sun comes up, right as the sun goes down, you get a little bit of wind. So we also are trying to get certain plants, you know, the clover we were talking about. Clover is a lagoon. So it's a natural way to put nitrogen out that's not going to wash in somebody's creek. And also, that white clover only gets about 3 inches tall, and you don't have to mow as much. We mow with a zero-turn mower because it goes 100 miles an hour, uses less fuel, and doesn't compact the ground. So it'd be nice to mow even less than that and have a natural lagoon, or being able to get nitrogen in that ground without having to gauge it. We really, again, try to make the grapes tough and do the things as well as not overprocess even the fruit we buy. If we buy any fruit, like the blackberries, the only thing that we buy, we make sure that we know who farmed it, how it was farmed, and what's going on. So when we get those blackberries, they come in really ripe, so they immediately freeze them. And when we unthaw those things, I mean, they're ripe. That's just really great because you've got folks that have an expertise in fermentation. You'll have people that have an expertise in blending. And you have people that just, you know, have this little knack. And the blackberries were just so tart. You had the acidity. You have more antioxidants than anyone. But the home place and the Chestnut Gap Cottage have been two really good wines for us that are very stable. A lot of people might use concentrate. That's not our cup of tea. That we use fresh fruit and we press it just like we do the grapes. And it's made just as a wine. It's not fortified. It's what you see is what you get. And I think you've tasted some of those wines.
I have for fact, and they're quite good, I have to say. What about the Vidal Blanc and the Viognier?
The Vidal Blanc is a very hardy grape. We get probably 8 tons an acre. If you come out here and look at the posts, they're kind of about 10 degrees pulled in. We put those in with a track hoe hammer that are there in the ground probably 4 feet, and they still get pulled in, and it just surprises me.
Excuse me, you're getting 8 tons an acre with a French hybrid?
Yeah, and keep in mind the Geneva Double Curtain will probably yield 30 to 40% more per acre.
Okay.
Because of the way you've got your trellis spread.
Yeah.
The Vidal Blanc has really come on well. Vidal Blanc is the Laurel Hill. Vidal Blanc, to me, almost like a Sauvignon Blanc. And because we're in a little cooler climate, but the aromatics that we get from this fruit, we normally don't pick till October. And we'll let that fruit hang. And we'll spray with things. If it's a rainy season where we're worried about mold or mildew, then we try to stay ahead of that with the topical. But we'll spray things like hydrogen peroxide. If you think about what that does, I mean, you rinse your mouth out with it. Any exposed organic material, it will take care of. But this past year, I think, was one of the best harvests we've had of the Vidal Blanc. And the older those vines get, it just seems the more aromatic to come out of them. A French hybrid sounds great, but it's just a great grape. Whether it's a hybrid, like if you take a Cabernet Franc and a Cabernet Sauvignon, that's where the Sauvignon Blanc got too close to the Cabernet Franc, and they, you know, that's where you get Cabernet Sauvignon. The next wine that you mentioned, I think you said the Viognier?
The Viognier, yeah, it won a double gold.
We have fun in the tasting room with that because we've got a couple of folks at a time. If you look at how it's spelled, it looks like Vigner.
Yep.
But it's Viognier. And Viognier is a state grape of Virginia. It's a very difficult grape to grow. So the Vidal Blanc and the Viognier have similar but different characteristics. The plant kingdom and fruits have flavors or flavonoids that are in the acid. The acids are where you get your flavors from. And you get them from tannins as well. You get the flavonoids that are in those acids. develop into the taste that you have. But when you hear people say it has a peach aroma or it has this or it has that, it's just like cats have eyes, dogs have eyes, people have eyes, people have eyes. And these flavonoids are similar in different plants, and that's where you kind of get those tastes. It's, a lot of people think that we add those. I don't write the tasting notes. I'm not much on that. I like people just to come up with their own list. We have fun with that. But the Viognier is really one of the only white grapes that I'm aware of that you can ferment with the skins. So you get a little bit more tannin out of that from the skins. Tannin comes from the skins and the seeds. So Viognier is a unique grape, but it's a very tough grape to grow. Viognier was almost extinct, if you can use that word, in the animal and plant. I guess you can use it interchangeable in the animal and plant kingdom. My understanding is back in the 70s, the Viognier, don't know if we introduced, I know that we brought several diseases to Europe through the soils where some of the American rootstock was taken over there. I think they were down to 30 acres. And they started bringing that over here to try and get it to propagate in California. Then it spread to the East Coast, and it's been really a pretty decent grape. It's just hard to grow to get it right at that pinnacle, you know, little tip to where you've got good sugars, but you still have your acidity, where you can get that good taste and that good aroma without just a lot of alcohol. To me, a good wine is where the alcohol's there. It cleanses the palate. You do the swirling, you can see that it's got good body, and you know, but you don't really notice the alcohol.
Alan, you've made us get our taste buds all a-twitter now, listening to the descriptions of some of your wonderful wines, and I have to tell the folks, I've tasted most of those down there, and they're really outstanding. If people wanted to come down and imbibe a few on their own, how would they reach you and how they contact you? What's your contact information?
We're St. Paul Mountain Vineyards. We have interstate signs. We partnered with Burkshire Vineyards, and we'd like you to come down and visit us both. So if you're on the Interstate 26, we're at the Bat Cave exit on 64 East. You can look us up on Facebook, St. Paul Mountain Vineyards. But what we do here is we really want people to come and enjoy. You know, you taste five things, like we said a little earlier with your tongue, bitterness, sweetness, acidity, and salt, and then there's that umami or whatever they call it. But the rest of it, we really try to get people to take their time and sniff the wines, swirl the wines, suck a little air through their mouth and really experience that, because you can smell hundreds of things. And when they talk about the finish on a wine, I mean, we do little wine tasting classes. We don't charge for them. But we really want people to learn about wines and feel comfortable about the wine. We also do ciders, as you know. We actually do a sherry. We get a nutty Chardonnay that's been in oak, and we've been fortunate to do a sherry, and we do a brandy, actually, from the apple. So it's turned out quite well. As you know, Chuck, once a year we'll go to France. We'll go to Normandy to study the ciders, and we'll go to the Burgundy region to study, because of the temperatures here. They get late frost, a lot of moisture, and it's cool, sometimes overcast. A Geneva double curtain will give you about a 6-foot cordon after each cluster, where you're going to have a vine sticking out there that's like a solar panel, not a cordon, but a vine, that will give you a little bit of extra sunshine when it's cloudy. We go in and stay on the farms. We were staying in a little place called Chateauneuf, which is Newcastle, and we would go into the Burgundy region and just meet these folks. And in the Burgundy region, most people can only grow Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And they do, they struggle about it. Our girls get upset if we don't have 14 to 16 wines to taste. And these folks are really having to make do with, two grapes and maybe five wines. So we go over there to really learn about the history, but we also don't get caught up in the past. As we were talking earlier, you have to be able to innovate, but you learn from the past and respect that tradition. But you see what you can do that's common sense or otherwise that you can improve on the future. So when you come to St. Paul Mountain Vineyards, we're not Chateau Ward, we're St. Paul Mountain Vineyards. We want you to feel at home. We want you to enjoy. Feel free to ask questions. But just go to the Facebook page or to our website. And if you just Google St. Paul Mountain Vineyards, that'll get you here as well. But we do have highway signs, interstate signs that get us all the way to the vineyard. We'd love to have you come out. We have music
on the weekends. We're open every day of the year. We tell people we're kind of like the Waffle House, only we don't stay open 24 hours, but we're open every day of the year.
Okay.
We joke with people and we tell them that on the holidays, the family holidays, we're open. We have a big Thanksgiving dinner here just to show appreciation for folks. We have a lot of folks that don't have family or that are single and that are alone on the holidays. But we also tell them that the crime rate decreases in Henderson County, but the crime rate goes down because when people are with their family and they've had all they can stand, we've got a place where they can go because we're even open on Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, New Year's Day, people shopping. We just like to have a good time and have people come and enjoy themselves, sit in front of the big fireplace. We've got a fireplace that has a 6-foot firebox, and we keep it going. The girls just can't wait. And if it comes if it gets below 40 degrees, they want to start the fireplace up. But we have to have a frost before we can start the fireplace, is my rule. So we would really love to have you come out, and I really appreciate your time and your interest. And we definitely have an interest in what you're doing and try and learn from everybody we meet. And would welcome you to come, and all the folks up in Madison County and surrounding area. We love agriculture, we love agritourism, and we don't want to see it develop into urban sprawl. That's one of the goals in my life, is to pick up pieces of property. We just purchased another 30-acre farm, but where we really want to see agriculture. And they use the term, and I'll close with this, that they use the term agritourism. I see it as agritourism and education, because we really try and educate people about agriculture, not just entertain them on trinkets, but we really do try and get people to understand how unique and blessed we are in this area with the things we discuss. You know, the more plant diversity than anywhere in the world, even more than the rainforest, as well as the geological diversity. You know, we just are very, very fortunate to be able to farm in this area. And I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today.
Alan, the pleasure's mine, and thank you so much for joining us on the Mountain Grapevine. We've been talking with Alan Ward, owner of the St. Paul Mountain Vineyards down in Hendersonville, North Carolina. It's certainly worth the trip down there to check out some of his wines. Alan, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate the opportunity.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!